What number is this, Chip?
Episode 9, Side 1 of More of the Monkees.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
This is Emily Dolenz, and you're listening to Zilch, the podcast full of the monkees.
And with that familiar music, you're listening to Zilch. We welcome you once again. We thank you for spending some of your valuable time with us. Today, we're looking at Side 1 of More of the Monkees, an album near and dear to Craig Cohen's heart.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely, yeah.
Joining me today for the intro for this episode is Craig Smith.
Hello there, Ken.
And Craig Hohen.
Hi, guys.
Or Craig 1 and Craig 2, we're still trying to figure that out.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, whatever it takes. So, I'll say Craig 1 and see who answers. Hey, Craig 1.
Yes.
Oh, got in there a little. It's kind of like a game show, a little buzzer kind of thing there.
You got to be quick.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, gentlemen, hit your buzzer when I say Craig 1. Ready? Craig 1. Okay, there you go.
All you, man.
Thank you, brother. I knew I liked you for a reason.
Since we're going to take a trip, a spin, if you will, of Side 1 of More of the Monkees and break it down and go track by track, I think it's time, before we do that, we'll hit into the Monkees mailbag.
P.O. Box 9847.
That's a great track. I don't care what anyone says. I like that one. Up first, Craig Smith, why don't you read the first one today?
This first review is from Spherical Gerbil, a real hoot and a half. 5-star rating.
Yeah.
After listening to more episodes of this lovely podcast, I can safely say it is pretty rad. Commentators are knowledgeable and friendly, the music choices are perfect, and the whole production in general is real top-notch.
Are they listening to the same show we're producing?
I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, okay.
The Monkees fan of me is truly delighted to listen to such a great podcast and be a part of the fun accompanying Facebook group.
And it is a fun Facebook group, by the way.
Agreed.
It really is. It's a nice one.
It's a good time.
A lot of great discussions going on there. We thank you, Spherical Gerbil, for your fine review. And please review us on iTunes if you get a chance. We love hearing this and sharing these with you. Craig Cohen, will you take the next one?
Sure thing. Scott Mackin says, home at last. If you love the Monkees, you are not alone. Finally, a place to be with friends who share the same passion. Very insightful, very informative, and most important, great fun. Ken Mills and the gang have great chemistry together. I always look forward to the next podcast, and now that they are doing the episodes, not to be missed.
I have to agree with Scott Mackin. Your and Jeff's reviews with Melanie Mitchell doing the scene-by-scene commentary of the episodes, it's a blast, and we're looking forward to more of that. It's really good. Really
awesome. I know we have a blast recording them.
I love you guys.
Oh, thank you, Craig. We love you.
Cheers.
Too.
Cheers. And I'll take this next one, guys. It's entitled Zilch, a Monkees Podcast from Bill Bengal. Zilch is a fantastic and fun podcast, perfectly suited to the Monkees. Ken and the gang, you guys are my gang again.
Yeah.
We've got to get jackets with like a logo and everything. That'd be really cool.
Down with that?
Yeah, like the Warriors. Ken and the gang always bring intelligent and thoughtful commentary. Have great guests and produce a very professional and listenable cast each time. As a longtime Monkees fan, musician, and member of a Monkees cover band, I am always happy to hear about other fans' love of Monkees music, and it's always interesting to hear tales of how other folks express their fandom. Keep them coming. I hope we get to hear all 53 episode commentaries and one for Head and 33 and a third as well. Signed, Bill from the Drunkies. So, hey, the Drunkies. Very cool.
Nice.
I'll have to play some of their stuff sometime. They actually have some really cool monkey-themed parties, and we saw a VJ guy from MTV, actually. If you do a search on YouTube, you'll find it. So it's really cool.
Is any of that going to be usable with this dog yelping
absolutely.
In the background?
Well, Craig Smith, you said you were going to buy you a dog, and... my gosh, I think you did.
And this is what happened.
You know, I think it's unfair. We've got to have the dog on the show someday.
He would be absolutely down with that. I'm sure he would be fine with that.
Well, let's find out what his favorite song is here on side one of More of the Monkees.
Hi, Zilch fans. This is Melanie Mitchell. Be sure to check out my book, Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. It's a lighthearted review and companion for the TV show that made the 60s fun. The paperback is available online from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and the ebook can be bought anywhere that fine ebooks are sold. Check out the Monkey Magic Facebook page, follow me on Tumblr at bluemoonalto.tumblr.com, and listen for my contributions here on Zilch, a Monkees podcast.
All right, well, it's time for side one of More of the Monkees, and I'm joined by our wonderful cast of characters here today. Now, let's do an overview of the album. To me, it kind of is hit or miss for me, and I think it was kind of hit or miss for the Monkees. As a matter of fact, one of the Monkees actually hated it quite a bit. Mike Nesmith was later to tell Melody Maker magazine that More of the Monkees was probably the worst album in the history of the world. I don't think it's that bad in any way, shape, or form. But on the other hand, there were quite a few other tracks that the band had been working on. 34 different songs, as a matter of fact, that had been recorded. And so everybody had in their mind's eye what they thought the album could be. And the boys were in Cleveland, Ohio, on tour, and they ran across the street to buy the album. They were dismayed by the cover image of them, and they were offended by the production overseer Don Kirshner's liner notes, which praised the songwriters before mentioning the band. And Mike was very furious about all of this. To me, the album has its definite highlights, and it's got some less shining moments. Craig Cohen, your thoughts overall, just as an overview, what are your thoughts on this? I think you're going to say it's probably your favorite Monkees album.
I've talked about my love of this album before, and I could actually say that if you move the songs around a little bit, swap one song out for another, I think a lot of people would consider this their favorite album. There's a lot of really neat firsts on this, too. You have the boys singing background vocals, which I don't think occurred on the first album. I could be wrong there. But you've also got Peter's first lead vocal, which is kind of historic. And then you've also got Mary Mary, which Run DMC did a rap version of, which you could argue sort of the Monkees' resurgence in the mid-80s.
It certainly didn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah. So, like I said, as we go through this, I'll tell you why this is one of their best albums.
Okay, and panning over to the left a little bit on 35 is Craig Smith.
You know, like I said in the episode about the Monkees' first album, I tend not to listen to these as albums, and I tend to listen to them more as groups of chronological sessions. So I had to go back and listen to the album proper for the first time in a while. It was better than I remember. I always kind of put this towards the bottom, and only because I feel like a couple of tracks drag it down, and I'll get into that. But also, I mean, we'll speak further about the production. I feel like this album feels disjointed and haphazardly thrown together, A, because it was, but B, because the sessions just took place in different places, and you had, you know, some tracks that were essentially just mono tracks with you know, something in the spectrum panned slightly or panned all the way, and everything else remains in the middle. So as a listen of a full, a full piece of work, I feel it fails there. Having said that, it does have a lot of great songs, and I'd rate it slightly higher than my mind would have rated it, a couple weeks ago after listening to it. That was a very convoluted sentence. I hope you understood what I was trying to say.
Of course. And of course, you know, we see the interviews where Don Kirshner said that he was responsible for the Monkees outselling the Stones and the Beatles at this time. This was during that time. The album was rushed to capitalize on the band's popularity. This was recorded in late 1966, and it displaced the band's debut album from the top of Billboard's 200 chart and remained at number one for 18 weeks, the longest of any Monkees album. Combined, the first two Monkees albums were on top of the Billboard chart for 31 consecutive weeks.
Amazing.
More of the Monkees also went to number one in the UK. In the US, it has been certified quintuple platinum by the RIAA with sales of more than 5 million copies. More of the Monkees is also more notable for being the first pop rock album to be the best-selling album of the year of 1966 in the US. For an album that's probably the quote-unquote probably the worst album in the history of the world, Jeff, what's your overview of More of the Monkees?
Well, I will say that I agree with what Craig Smith said, and I will disagree with a lot of what Craig Cohen said.
Monkey fight! And
you know, basically, I'm a very nonviolent person.
Oh, really? That's very refreshing. Oh.
I love you, Craig Cohen. I really do, and I hate to disagree with you so much here, and I like I said before, I hate to play the villain on this, but overall, I want people to understand that I like the songs on this album. I think the guys turned in solid performances on most of these tracks, mm-hmm. but the fact that it was rushed, I think a lot of the production suffered, and the songs don't sound as good as they could have. And I'll point out a couple of examples as we go through each track where you can, if you own the deluxe edition, you can take the original track and post it up against one of the bonus tracks and hear what could have been if they had taken the time to really put this album out the way it deserved to be put out. Overall, I think from a performance standpoint and from a song standpoint, I think it's a pretty decent record. It's not my favorite record. It's not my least favorite record. One of the things I have a lot of trouble with is that some of the great songs on this record were not given the proper attention that they deserved. And I mentioned that on another recording that we had done on a Mickey Dolenz cover of one of the tracks on this album that I thought got much better treatment on the solo album than it did on this album. So as we go through these tracks, I think we'll get a little bit more into my overall thoughts on the record. But I think that the rushed production of this really hurt the record. But the Rhino remaster did help a bit. So when you're listening to the remastered Rhino version, you're hearing a better version than the initial CD releases that were put out back in the late 80s.
What do you guys think of the cover, Jeff Hewlett?
Kind of mediocre in a way. I mean, it's not a bad cover. It's not the best cover. I don't think it's as good as the Monkees' debut album cover. Mm-hmm. But I never looked at it and thought it was terrible.
Craig Cohen.
I think it is awesome. And if you look at it from a conceptual standpoint, here's my take on it. So you've listened to the first album. It's blown you away. You have fallen flat on your back. And now with More of the Monkees, here they come with 12 more tracks. And they're looking down at you saying, "We hope you're ready, because we're about to deliver some great, great songs."
Wow, man, you've put way too much thought into that. I'm just putting that out there. Craig Smith, your thoughts?
We are going to deliver you 9 great songs and 3 that should not be on this album.
Well, they can't say that before you buy the album. Well,
that's why I'm saying it for them now. You know what? I think the album cover is decent. I know Mike had obviously a huge problem with it, and apparently it was a photo that was never supposed to be used for an album cover. It was them promoting some JCPenney's clothes. But here's a bit of album cover trivia. What other Monkees album features a shot taken from this same day wearing the same clothes?
Gosh, I don't know. You guys?
Is it? I'm probably wrong, but was it Monkey Flips?
No.
Okay, I'm wrong.
Nope, that was from the episode where they're playing What Am I Doing Hanging Around, I think.
They're wearing the same clothes?
Wearing the same exact clothes. Do you want a hint?
Yeah,
please.
Yes. It was a black and white version of the picture that was hand tinted.
That was then, this is now.
Then and now. Good job.
Nice.
Well, yeah, after I got like a softball lobbed across the plate, hint. Yeah, of course I can come with it. Wow, I can't believe that. I never picked up on that before.
Yep. Well, and I wouldn't have noticed it if somebody didn't. I read it online a couple weeks ago and I was like, wow, son of a gun, that it is. All those years staring at the album covers like a mental patient, never realized that.
Wow. Well, you learn something every day, folks. And of course, the boys weren't happy to be in those JCPenney clothes. Have you guys ever seen the JCPenney catalog ad for those?
No.
I have not.
It looks really strange. It's out there on the net, so I'll try to post them on our Facebook page. But, yeah, it was quite bizarre to
see. Please do.
Yeah. To see that. And you could kind of understand, you know, they didn't pick those clothes out, so they didn't want that on the album cover. Of course, it was probably a good commercial for the JCPenney deal. So there you go. Marketing Synchronicity 101.
Is it all right if we have a real quick discussion about stereo versus mono? Because I would say that if you're looking to get this album, you search out the deluxe version, which has the stereo and the mono mix. And you pretty much disregard the stereo mix, because for me, this album sounds its best in glorious mono.
Agreed.
Disagreed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the problem with this album is that it's, you know, you have so many of the tracks that were just recorded subpar. So that there was so much bouncing that technically what you get is a mono track with maybe at some point a backing vocal panned a little bit. So
well,
the stereo really suffers for that.
No, that I agree with that for the most part. But if you look at this track or this album on a track by track basis, there are some songs that get what I would consider a proper stereo mix, and other songs that get this kind of half-hearted, yeah, you know, engineer in the studio who's like, you know, down on stereo, and it's like this is a fad and mono is the way to go. So I'm just gonna put minimal effort into the stereo mix. Kind of approach. And I mean, I'll mention a couple as we go, but I think that overall there's a couple of really tracks that really stand out as having proper decent stereo mixes.
Right. Yes. I just feel like as an album it for me it kind of feels disjointed because of the differences in production throughout the tracks. That's why I kind of gravitate to the mono.
Completely agree with that.
Yeah, that's the same thing for me, whereas some of these stereo mixes are distracting, where you're so keyed in on an instrument that's hanging out at a certain, you know, part of the mix. And that's cool when you're trying to deconstruct a song, but when you're trying to enjoy an album, it's not so good. And I also noticed that the mono mix, for me, a lot of the background vocals sit better in the mix. Some of the songs, the background vocals in the stereo mix, they just don't have as much power to them because of where they're sitting in the stereo spectrum.
Right. And the other thing about the mono mix is, and you know, I don't know that I'd across the board say that I prefer the mono mixes of the first four albums, but when you're used to the episodes, they're the versions you hear. So, I mean, they're great to hear in stereo when the stereo mix is done well, but the mono kind of carries an episode-like nostalgia when I listen to it. And so I usually gravitate to those for that reason. But having said that, some of the songs that were done wrong during the initial mixing, and when I'm not saying the mix was done wrong, but the song was done wrong by the mix. Andrew Sandoval in the deluxe edition has gone back and was able to sync up the various stages of the multi-track, and you get really clean stereo mixes of a few of these songs in the deluxe. I guess we can hit those as we get to them, but it's definitely worth the deluxe edition for that alone.
I agree with you, Craig Smith, on that, and I'm hesitant to set myself up as the villain here as I twist my handlebar mustache between my fingers, but I think I'm the only one in this crowd who's going to stand up for stereo.
This
is completely personal preference, and I don't want to say that anybody in the audience of this show should prefer one over the other, but for me, mono is like sandpaper on my ears. And when you put out a half-hearted effort at a stereo mix, it really kind of bugs my ears. And I do prefer to listen to an album in stereo, whether or not the mono mixes are quote-unquote superior or not, or the way that people were intended to hear it. I just think that the mono mix does a better job at hiding some of the poor production choices that were made, especially for background vocals on a lot of these songs.
Totally.
So I will stump here for the stereo mixes, and where it shines, it shines, and where it falls, and we'll be pointing those out as we go.
Yeah.
Well, thankfully with Rhino, we don't have to pick and choose. You can get the deluxe and get both stereo and mono mixes. So,
yes, sir.
Thank God for a Rhino.
Love them.
And the first track is She, Craig Smith. Tell us a bit about She, written by Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart.
I am a huge fan of this song. I love this song. It's got a good groove to it. The backing vocals are great. It's got that snarly little guitar at the beginning. It's rhythmic. The thing that I remember most about this song, I'm pretty sure after the initial Monkees marathon on MTV, I started to record all of the episodes on Nickelodeon. And the first one that I recorded was, there were actually two. It's one of these. It's I've Got a Little Song Here and the one about the Purple Flower Ganger. She is in one of them. And I remember watching those two episodes over and over and over again. So one of my earliest memories of becoming a Monkees fan had to do with this song. And it's great. I love it. On, you know, on the top tier of this album.
Craig Cohen.
I've talked about how this is my favorite Monkees album. And this is a great opening track for the album. You've got a really, really cool kind of like Phil Spector-ish drum beat, which is really neat. You've got that garage rock sound that that I love so much about the first album. And you've got Monkees on background vocals, which is really cool. You've got, from what I can tell, Davey and Peter, as well as Mickey, backing up Mickey's lead vocal, which is really great. Just a really, really good tune. And Mickey, man, he is so emotive on this song. Really, really selling the lyrics.
I agree, and I like the back and forth between them all. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Craig. This is a great way to open this album. There's a few things that they're really lovable about this song. One thing that I really like is the dueling Mickey vocals with the background vocals when they go through that whole love her, love yeah. her. That whole section of the song is really playful and fun. And when you weigh this against some of the other songs in the album, this is what I consider one of the almost proper stereo mixes for this album. There are some other tracks that kind of have a lazy stereo mix where they were kind of just a mono mix with a little bit of processing done. But the stereo mix of this is one of the better ones on the remastered version. And when I was younger and I first got into the Monkees, I kind of took this album and I looked at this song as almost a prequel to Stepping Stone.
Oh, wow.
So if you, I know that it's technically not, but if you look at what Mickey is singing about early on the album, it's this woman who is kind of beating him down and not treating him well. And then later on in the album, he's kind of saying, hey, I've had enough of this crap. You're not my, I'm not your stepping stone. I'm moving on. So it's an interesting juxtaposition between She and Stepping Stone in the sequence of songs in the album.
I would agree with that as well. Bobby Hart played the organ, and as much as I love Bobby Hart, I'm not a big fan of organ solos for the most part. At least ones where the notes just hang for a long period of time. It's the reason I don't like Mr. Moonlight by the Beatles. So I don't
know
if
anybody... Well, that's just not a great song to start with.
Yeah, that song does really stink. I love the Beatles, huge Beatle fan, but yeah, that's probably my least favorite Beatles song.
Can you think of an organ solo that you enjoy? Maybe one in the Monkees catalog? What about like Early Morning Blues and Greens?
Yeah,
like something
that's
like that.
Different. That's different.
Okay.
This is just really brassy sounding and annoying.
She turned around.
let's move on to the second track, When Love Comes Knocking at Your Door, written by Carol Barisager and Neil Sedaka. Craig Smith, please take this one.
This song is absolutely outstanding. I love this song. A chuggy little guitar and a great, great Davey vocal with the back and forth, answer vocals, you know, to the lead vocal. Another one that they kind of performed live here and there. I think they did it on the 87 tour, but they also did an acoustic version of it in 89, which again, we mentioned during the Monkees episode, I think we were talking about Take a Giant Step. Mm-hmm. They did the same thing with this song, three-part harmony, and it was incredible. It was great to see. One of my absolute favorites. Love this song.
Jeff Hewlett.
Yeah, I think this is one of the songs on this album that got a good shot at a decent stereo mix out of the gate. The arrangement is a kind of minimal, and it's a kind of a boilerplate Davy Jones love song, but I really, really like it. Not the best Davy track, but definitely not the worst, and I agree with Craig Smith. I love the dueling Davey vocals where he's questioning and answering himself, kind of, so you have him kind of singing to himself and singing back to himself. One of the better Davey songs on this track, on this album.
Neil Sedaka played piano on this, as well as one of the writers, and he and Carol Barisager also produced this track. It was recorded on November 23rd, 1966, along with The Girl I Left Behind Me, which popped up later on the Monkees Instant Replay album in 1969.
Last song recorded for this album also.
Yes. Craig Cohen, your thoughts on When Love Comes Knocking at Your Door?
I think this is the start of a great run of Davey songs on this album. Davey has a lot of really good tracks on this album. He also has the worst track on this album and possibly the worst track in the entire Monkees catalog, but we'll talk about that later. Jeff mentioned the stereo mix. I do think that out of all the stereo mixes on this album, this is one that I would probably sign off on as saying, listen to it. But I also would like to assume that that is Davey on the maracas in this song.
When love comes knocking at your door, just open up and let it in. It's gonna be a magic carpet ride. So little girl, now don't you run and hide. I know that you've been hurt before, so don't you be afraid no more. Throw off the chains that bind and leave the past behind. When love comes knocking at your door,
okay.
I know
knocking at your door,
that you're afraid of loving me.
Just open up and let him in.
And girl, don't fight it and you'll see.
It's gonna be a magic carpet.
That loving you will make me hide.
So little girl, don't you run and
hide. Cause baby,
that you've been hurt before.
I know that you've been hurt before.
So don't you be afraid no more.
So don't you be afraid no more.
Throw off the chains that bind and leave the past behind. No need to worry anymore.
Though you've played at love and lost and sorrows turn your heart to frost, I will melt your heart again. Remember the feeling as a child when you woke up and morning smiled. It's time you felt like you did then. Come with me, I'm gonna take you where the taste of life is green, and every day old wonders to be seen. Come with me, leave yesterday behind, and take a giant step outside your mind.
You stare at me in disbelief, you say for you there's no relief, but I swear I'll prove you wrong.
Don't sit here in your lonely room, just staring back in silent gloom. That's not where you belong. Come with me, I'm gonna take you where the taste of life is sweet. And every day holds wonders to be seen. Come with me and take a giant step outside your mind. Come with me, leave yesterday behind, and take a giant step outside your mind.
Take a giant step
outside your mind.
Take a giant step
outside your mind.
Moves on to our next song, Mary Mary, written by Michael Nesmith and produced by Michael Nesmith. On guitar was Peter Tork and Glenn Campbell and a few other folks. And I'm really thinking that Craig Cohen likes this song because someone played the piano and his name was Michael Cohen. So
yes, no relation.
No relation. Okay.
Not that I know of. I should do some research.
Well, why don't you tell us about your uncle's work on this song, Mary Mary, Craig Cohen.
Overall, I think this song is a great, great track, and I would almost argue that it sounds a little ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. The drum has a groove to it that I don't think a lot of rock bands were really, really doing yet. It's got a little bit more groove, dare I say, than some of the stuff, maybe a little bit of a swing to it. You can totally see why Run DMC would have hijacked it, to sort of rap over, because the drum beat is so cool. And it's just a great song, too. I think in terms of songs that use women's names, if you can repeat the name, how cool is that? And I also think it's neat that Mickey provided all the backing vocals for himself on this track as well.
You know, I've never heard anybody write a song called Gladys. If so, Peter Tork would have sung that one. Greg Smith, your thoughts on Mary Mary?
Love this song. And let me just add, since it was mentioned earlier, it was very surreal at the age of 15 or so when I bought that Run DMC 12-inch single for Mary Mary and saw the Nesmith credit on the label. It was solely credited to Mike, even though they wrote the rap that goes around the sample.
Right.
Just a great tight pop song. The guitar is great. The rhythm is great. Drums. It's interesting to note that this was recorded on the same day as Last Train to Clarksville. So this was, I'm not sure exactly when sessions ended, but this could have been a contender for the Monkees' first album, possibly.
Yeah, according to this, it says it was recorded at Western Recorders, Hollywood, July 25th, 1966. So.
Yep, a very productive day. There were five songs started that day.
Wow.
I have notes in front of me, by the way. I did not rattle that off the top of my head. I'm not that ridiculous.
Either way, I'm impressed.
But yeah, just great. And the live versions from 67 were great as well. You can see this in the Monkees on Tour episode where Davey takes over for Mickey on the drums and Mickey comes out to the front of the stage and does his James Brown bit.
Yeah.
Which was always a favorite. You know, watching that episode as a kid, you get, you know, like these little 20, 30 second snippets of what was a live Monkees show in those days. And it was incredible to see, and you want to see the whole thing. So getting those little teases of what it was like, just awesome. You know, a great song all around.
Jeff Hewlett.
Well, going last on this one, I've been pretty much hamstrung by both of the Craigs. My talking points that I'd written down have all been crossed off. This is a great track. I really love this. You've got a fantastic bass riff that flows through the entire song. And a couple things that I wanted to mention. One was, if you have the remastered version of this and you strap on a pair of good headphones, listen to some of the really cool little guitar fill riffs that are going on during this song. There's some great, great guitar work kind of in the mix there that you may lose track of if you're paying attention to the lyrics themselves. And there is a lot of credit being given to the Run DMC rap cover of this, but to the contrary, It only peaked at number 75 on the Billboard Top 100, so it wasn't really that well received.
Yeah, it wasn't huge.
No,
but it was still weird.
It was out there, and it was a Monkees sample in the earlier days of rap sampling other tracks.
Yeah,
that's true. Mary Mary appeared on the Paul Butterfield Blues Band's East and West release a year before the Monkees version was released.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
The 1990 Arista CD version features the extended stereo mix, the same that appears in the More Greatest Hits CD version. So there we go.
I own that.
Very cool.
Yep.
All right.
That was 1987, actually. The More the Monkees Arista was released on CD. 87 or 88. I think it was the Greatest Hits that was released a little later.
Yeah. Run DMC's track was in 1988 as well, so they probably a little, again, corporate synchronicity again.
Yep.
So it all works out.
They can go on like that for half an hour.
Monkees from a Fan's Perspective chronicles my experiences with the Monkees from the 1960s into today, along with stories by other fans and how the Monkees touched our lives. A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective by Fred Velez, available on Amazon.com, CreateSpace.com, Smashwords.com, Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble Nook, and other print and ebook outlets.
Our next track, Hold On Girl, lead vocal by Davy Jones, written by Jack Keller, Ben Raleigh, and Billy Carr. Backing vocals by Mickey Dolenz, lead vocals by Davy Jones. Jeff Hewlett, your thoughts?
Well, this, I think, is one of the tracks where the lazy stereo mix comes into play. Looking at the album as a whole, I think this album is hand clap heavy. There are several songs that utilize the hand clap on this album, more so than any other Monkees album. And this is one of the songs that has you got some hand clap going on in it. There's an alternate version that was recorded in September of 66 on disc 2 of the deluxe set that's out by Rhino that sounds much better and it seems to be more properly mixed in stereo. I think it's just billed in as an alternate version. I think Craig Smith may have more insight into what it actually is as opposed to what I have here. So this is actually another one of those songs, though, if you strap on your good headphones, there's some great little keyboard playing that's going on buried in the mix during the verses of this track that are, I think, is really exceptional to listen for.
Craig Smith.
A great track. I love this track. To speak to the other version, quite simply, it was just a version that was recorded about a month earlier. Like you said, in September, the album version was done in October. It's a fairly, a fairly similar arrangement, but obviously a different recording. The version on the deluxe edition of the first Hold On Girl is a remix that was done in 2006. It's also featured on the 1989 Missing Links CD in a different mix. Yeah, I've always enjoyed this song. Like you mentioned, get that, in the middle, that kind of clap rhythm, the harpsichord. I always thought it had a nice chord structure and a great melody, and it's a little different, for the Monkees. It's got a different type of sound, and I dig it. Also, performed the 87 tour was just a wealth of weird choices in set list, and Mickey did Through the Looking Glass in drag, to which Davey came out on stage and performed Hold On Girl at him in drag, which was quite a treat and awesome to hear. Just a great, great song. Love this one.
Yeah, it was very, very funny to see them do that. It was fantastic. Craig Cohen, your take on Hold On Girl.
This is actually the start of what you could loosely call the psychedelic trilogy on this album. This and the next two songs, for me, are sequenced perfectly and take you on a really, really great journey. As mentioned, the four on the floor type of beat is great. The harpsichord is excellent. And I also think that this is a song that if there are people out there that sort of shy away from the Davies sung songs because they might be a little too sappy or not as cool as the some of the other songs that are sung by different members of the Monkees, I think this song would really change people's opinion, because I think it's one of Davey's quote-unquote cooler songs, at least in my opinion. And I think this version absolutely slays that alternate version, which to me just drags. It feels a lot slower.
That's terrible.
What, the slower version?
No, the alternate version. I think it's great.
Really? I'm thinking of this, like, it's a lot slower, though, correct?
I don't think it's that much slower.
It's slower. It's
a little.
It's missing that drum beat.
Yeah.
It is.
The one on Missing Links, Volume 2, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when I spoke to saying that it was, I think I said the same arrangement, that's not really what I meant. What I meant was that the song structure is the same, definitely a different arrangement. I think I chose poor wording on that one.
Well, get with it, man.
Sorry. I'll take the demerits.
Monkey demerits.
Because of that, can I sit out talking about Laugh and The Day We Fall in Love?
No, we have to.
Sorry.
Why'd you put Laugh first?
Sorry.
It should be the other way around.
It needs it. You so bad. He took your love and then just walked away. I know that you have got a reason to be sad, but hell, his love is away. Oh,
Okay, the next track is Your Auntie Griselda, written by Jack Keller and Diane Hildebrand, lead vocal by Peter Tork, produced by Jeff Berry and Jack Keller. And again, the one of the things that you run into, and it can have good or bad consequences, but having all these different producers, it can vary from track to track. And I think it worked better on the first album than it did this one. One interesting thing I can say about Auntie Griselda, and I'm going to lose everybody on this one, I understand it 100%, but I'd love to hear Slipknot do a cover of this song.
Wow, that would be great.
If you could just hear it in my head, if I could get it out, it would be fantastic. But this song was recorded.
Give it a shot.
No. Anyway, this track was recorded at American Studios, Studio City, October 23rd, 1966. Craig Smith, your take on Your Auntie Griselda.
Yeah. When I said nine great songs and three not so great,
yep.
I was calling this one of the three.
Ah.
And there was a time where I really enjoyed this song, and I think I know what it is. I enjoy it on this record, but I have just been slammed by so many like substandard live versions of it that I never want to hear the song again. Like Peter turns it into like a soft shoe song. Like it's got none of the bite. You know, it's kind of like, it's like when he does it now, it's kind of like a lighthearted, jaunty kind of tune. And it does not, I don't feel it works that way. And I don't think that I've ever heard a great, I'd have to go back and listen to the 67 versions of this, but I've never heard this song done very well live great, just because it misses all the kind of psychedelic rock arrangement. And so I really shouldn't hold that against the version on this album, but I'm going to anyway.
Okay. I think that it would work better live if they'd get rid of the keyboard and the horns and just made it straight up guitar.
Yeah.
I think it would have what it needs right there.
Yeah, I agree.
Jeff Hewlett.
Wow. Craig Smith just saved himself. I was about to climb through this microphone and grab his neck and choke him when he was talking about how this is one of his three bottom songs on this album.
Jeez.
But when he qualified it by saying he was judging it based on the live versions, I can cut him slack on that because I agree. The album version of the song is the definitive version, and I agree that it gets a little bit too lighthearted when it gets transferred into a live version. The original album cut is kind of more of like a bashing song, isn't it, against this girl's aunt who is very judgmental. This is one of my favorite songs on this record. It's a fun lyric, a great arrangement. I love the gibberish mouth noise part that Peter does kind of in the break of this song, and I always wondered how many takes did it get to get that part down. It's one of those things that strikes me as something that he could have nailed on the first take as just a riff, or it might have been one of those ones where he was like, well, it might not have come off right, let me do that over and over again until I get it right. And
6 hours later.
Yeah, 6 hours later. And I think one of the unfortunate parts about this song, though, for Peter, was that it was the song that kind of carried over his goof role on the TV show that was maybe not necessarily what he deserved on a personal level, right? Because Peter's actually kind of a smart guy. He's a talented musician, mm-hmm. but he got relegated to this goofy, kind of a dopey guy role when that really wasn't necessarily what he was in real life. And it's sad that his first, or maybe his even best known song on a Monkees record is this, which kind of, it fits his role on the show. To me, that's kind of a sad thing. And I guess in closing, I'll say, I'll embarrass myself a little bit on this. Is when I was younger, I loved this track a lot, but I never really realized until later on, more recently, that at the end of the song, when he's trailing off, he's actually riffing on the name Griselda. And for some reason, that never registered with me when I was younger, when he's talking about Grizzle-da, Grizzle-da-da.
Yeah,
at the end, it never registered with me that he was riffing on the name Griselda.
Yeah. My favorite part of this whole song, And you guys are going to think, well, that seems like an odd favorite part. But when Pete does that scream, yeah! You can hear the enthusiasm.
Love that.
If he's having a good time on that track, the zenith is right there. Craig Cohen, your thoughts?
I love this track. I think, first of all, it's so weird sounding for the Monkees. It almost sounds like it would be something that like Ray Manzarek in the Doors would have done. So it gets points just for that, where you've got this almost like wall of weird noise coming towards you when the song starts. It almost like starts right up. There's no like ramping up to it. It almost sounds like it comes in like mid-note even, which is really great. And then I also love the fact that this is Peter on vocals. And even if you hadn't been following the TV show, you knew that this was Peter because you'd already heard all the other Monkees sing. So I can imagine the excitement of discovering Peter's first song, which is really cool. And I also love the nonsense vocals parts of this song. Just overall, a really great track, a nice sort of second song in what I call that that psychedelic trilogy or suite that ends the first side of the album.
I think that you could take this beginning track and drop it into the middle somewhere of Tomorrow's Gonna Be Another Day, and you could make a long extended mix of the two.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I mean, kind of think it out. You guys hear what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Okay.
You're anti-Griselda, why you bugging?
Yeah. Oh, wow. What fun. She says she knows my vibes, my memory, so. Oh, yeah, she swears you right, your auntie Griselda. You only know the things she wants you to know. Okay, our next track is one of the best-known songs to come off this album, and one of the greatest songs the Monkees ever recorded, so I guess I'm putting my opinion in there first. I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, written by Boyce and Hart. Jeff Hewlett, would you take this one?
Wow. This song, to me, stands out for a lot of different reasons, but this was this album that featured very few. I mean, I think there's only one, technically one single that came out from this record. And Stepping Stone was the flip side of the I'm a Believer single. Mm-hmm. And I really think, and I'm not completely sure, but it was not a double A side. But I think this could have technically been a double A side. because I think I'm a Believer went all the way to the top of the charts. I think Stepping Stone got to around number 20, which is pretty damn good for a flip side. Mm-hmm. So this is also one of the songs that stands out on this album as getting what I consider a true proper stereo mix. And that may be a side effect of being a B-side of a single, but I think this song is one of very few that gets what I think is a truly proper stereo treatment on this record. And I don't want to go too far into how great I think this song is, because I'm sure Craig and Craig are going to go pretty deep into that, but definitely a huge standout track for me.
My God, I just realized you guys sound like a law firm.
Craig, and Jeff?
No, Craig and Hewlett.
Wait a minute, why is my last name in there?
It just sounds more
Cohen,
like a lawyer.
Cohen, Smith, and Hewlett?
No.
I don't know.
Craig, and Hewlett. Anyway, Craig and Craig and Hewlett. Keep you monkeys out of jail. Anyway, Bobby Hart played organ on this, and lead vocal by Mickey Dolenz, backing vocal by Tommy Boyce. Craig Cohen, your take on I'm Not Your Stepping Stone.
Just a really great way to end the first side of the album, and you've come off of these two sort of psychedelic leaning songs to my ear, and then you sort of transition into like a bridge almost between that psychedelic sound and just really a straight up rocker with another just tremendous Mickey vocal, where he's really, really selling the lyrical content. And one of the highlights of this song, in a song that has many highlights, is the end when it sort of goes into what sounds to me like double time, with the drums picking up the beat and then the background vocals playing off that as well. Just a really excellent track. And like I said, this album has a great opener and side one has a great closer.
Aha. Uh-huh. And in a way, I feel that this is one of the first punk songs. It definitely has that garage punk kind of thing going on. Craig Smith, your thoughts?
There is absolutely nothing I can say about this song that hasn't already been said. It's great. It's I love the way that it goes into that organ bit, you know, and, you know, the little bit of hesitation, and then, you know, into that double time thing with the backing vocals going over it. It's so good. It's so good. It's timeless. And again, this is another one of the songs that was in one of those first Monkeys episodes that I recorded. I think it was the episode with the Purple Flower Gang, and I believe it was the Romp. So those songs always have really, really distinct memories for me, because they're, you know, they were really my first exposure that I watched over and over and over again when I was getting back into the Monkeys. So yeah, a great, great track. Garage Monkeys, you can't go wrong.
Yep. And even though I didn't care for Bobby Hart's organ solo in She, it totally kicks butt in this one. So
used to great effect.
Yeah, great. And it builds the tension. There's a tension there along with the drums. It's just absolutely amazing. The original mono and stereo mixes differ in two spots. You want to tell us about that, Craig?
In the stereo album master, the vocals are there in the intro to the second verse. The mono mixes differ. There's a different mono mix on the single than there is on the album. And on the mono single, there are no vocals before the second verse. That little bit before the second verse is instrumental. But there are no edits. On the mono album master, you have the vocals before the second verse, but the fade out is longer due to the mono single master fades out without edits, but the mono album is a little bit longer because there are extra repeats of the Not Your Stepping Stone towards the end. So the mono single, mono album, two different versions. Mixes, I should say.
You know, it's a shame that there's not a wiki page devoted just to this sort of thing. Would anybody know anything about a good resource for Monkees mixes?
I don't know, but some dude with a lot of time on his hands should really put something like that together.
Do we have any idea of where we could find a place that would document every single permutation of every Monkees' different mix of everything they've ever recorded? Does anyone know of any place like that?
I think I do. I think the other Craig might know.
Really? What's the name of that website?
There is a website called Monkeys Mixography, and it can be found at monkeysmixography.wiki.com. And it pretty much is a Monkeys discography that is more detailed than anybody would ever need.
And chances are, if you just did a search for Monkeys Mixography,
it'll come up. Yeah, type it in as one word, it'll definitely come up. And just while we're on the subject, I really need to send a shout out to a bunch of guys who work on that site with me, Arthur, Juan, and Derek. There are more. There's a Facebook discussion page where we all kind of bounce around notes on these mixes before they go up on the site. But those three guys all have access to the site. They keep it going. They have stepped in where I've been burned out. So they deserve a lot of credit.
Talking earlier that if you move some songs around, it might be a better album. I think if you would have put I'm Not Your Stepping Stone in slot one and She in slot six, I would have felt so much better about this album.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man.
I disagree.
That my prequel sequel.
Yeah. Your prequel sequel?
Yeah, well, She is the prequel to Stepping Stone.
Yeah, but, you know.
Oh, come on, Ken.
Yeah, but he could tell her off, and then he'd be bummed out, and she.
But for me,
but that would make Mickey a pathetic, whining wussy. And, he rolls and grows back to a girl who's mistreating him, and then complains about it.
And Mickey's
not that emo.
Would never do that. Mickey is not.
No, Mickey's
emo.
Awesome.
We love.
All of
Mickey
a sudden,
Dolan's.
This has become a concept album.
Yeah. Well,
I gotta say, there's nothing like watching the needle trail off the end of the groove and hear them riff on the end of Stepping Stone. I will never get rid of this at the end of the side. Never.
Well, fine, be that way.
Yeah, most of my changes would be on the second side.
You ain't kidding.
Well, that's something to look forward to as we discuss side two of More of the Monkees.
Oh, that's great.
So that's it for side one. And of course, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/ZilchMonkeysCast. You can also find us on Twitter at ZilchCast. Look for us there. See you there. We also have some cool Zilch shirts available for sale on the Facebook page, so check it out, and if you have any questions, ask around, and we'll point you in the right direction.
When love comes knocking at your door.
Oh, Lord.
Only difference between me and Sarah Clark is I'm stone legal. Hi, Sarah!
Hey, Ken, how's it going?
It's going good. So what are you up to today?
I am up to, and I'm sorry I couldn't make the panel today, but I'm actually editing a really nifty thing that's going to be coming out in the next few episodes. It is a panel I did with several really talented creative artists that are involved in the Monkees fandom on fandom creativity. And we had a lot of fun recording it, and I really hope folks will like it.
Well, it should be something to look out for. But today, you're joining me for something that we're going to call
pre-evolution.
Yes.
And it is a focus on what some of the guys were doing musically prior to making monkeys out of themselves or allowing themselves to be made monkeys. And today, what are we doing, Sarah?
We are going to be doing a song that Mickey Dolenz actually both wrote and recorded in 1965, shortly before he auditioned for the Monkees, called Don't Do It.
Kind of dig it.
Yeah, it's not like hit single material or anything. I mean, I can understand why it wasn't released at the time. The music and arrangement of it, I mean, it's very basic, but it's solid. You know, he's definitely kind of trying for a Barry R&B thing, and I think he gets pretty close, especially for being so early in his career. I think he would have just probably barely been 20 at the time he recorded this.
This song was actually recorded in 1965. Pre-Monkees, but after the Monkees were a big hit, the record label, which was called Challenge, re-released it in 1967.
It did reach number 75 on the Billboard charts when it was released in 1967 at the height of Monkey Mania, so there you go.
So it was a bit of a cash-in for the Challenge record label, so it's pretty cool to hear, pretty cool to hear. And of course, when you hear something like Don't Do It, you automatically think of this.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Order, order. Can I have some order, please?
A bagel with cream cheese and a cream soda.
Don't do that.
Oh, excuse me. Don't do that!
And one thing I did want to note is Mickey does not get, I think, enough credit as I think he deserves as a lyricist. When you listen to these lyrics, I mean, they're a lot of fun, and I like the kind of double entendre thing he's got going on. And it's just, for being so early in its career, it's the lyrics are very witty and very fun, and they're an enjoyable listen. Though this single, I think, is maybe a little rough around the edges at points, you can still really sense the raw talent that Mickey has as a singer, and you can kind of catch glimmers of what we know is to come.
And it seems to be a bit naughty. You know, a bit naughty. Wink, wink, grin, grin.
Say no more.
Yeah, if you're gonna do it, why don't you do it with me, man? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Well, that wraps up another Laugh Riot. And this is Mike Nesmith, Mickey Dolenz,
and Peter Tom,
and Davy Jones,
and Mickey Dolenz, reminding you to save the Texas prairie chicken.
Boom, boom. Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Well, I guess it's time to call it a podcast.
Okay, it's a podcast.
Yep, absolutely.
And very good. Well, let's close out this episode with us all trying to sing this song.
Bye.
Zilch, take some time to monkey around.
Here we go, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from
Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit monkeys audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the monkeys or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
When love comes knocking at your door.
Then on the mono mix.
Audrey's done.
And the Toronto Maple Leafs score and win the game.
The person on the phone does.
Hello. 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 Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, wait, the monkey.
I hate these kids.
So that's what it's all about.
Yeah. It's pretty scary.
You know what's even more scary?
What?
You can't say on television.
Oh, I remember reading in the paper where, due to a lack of interest, tomorrow was canceled, so we'll have to make it day after tomorrow.
I don't want to be a chicken. Come on. I don't want to be a chicken. 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 Ward, I don't want to be a chicken. 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 I don't want to be a chicken.